and it was a big lift, but it was also super exciting because there were so many people in the neighborhood. Just, this was like, wow, I can get new skills. I can earn some income for my family, and I can really help out our city to solve a problem that is really pressing.
Welcome to the Manufacture Houston podcast, where Houston's manufacturers come to share, learn, and grow. Brought to you by Alchemy Industrial. For more information, check out alchemyindustrial.com. In today's episode of Manufacture Houston, we welcome Lauren Calderera and Ann Whitlock with the Sewn Goods Collaborative. The Sewn Goods Collaborative is a grassroots movement that taps into the cutting and sewing skills of recent immigrants who have moved to the Houston area in order to create a small business that is now making a variety of products right here in Houston. I'm sure you'll love this episode.
Lauren, Anne, welcome. It's good to see both of you, or hear from both of you.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. We've talked a lot about the Sewn Goods Collaborative for quite a long time, and it's really coming into shape. And so I think the listeners are going to be really interested to hear what it's all about. But before we jump into that, why don't we do some introductions from each of you, and then we'll jump into the meat of what we're up to here. So Anne, you want to go first?
Sure. So I am Anne Whitlock, and I'm the founding director of Connect Community, which we started in the Gulfton Sharpstown area about 6 years ago. It is based on a community development model called Purpose-Built Communities, which is started 25 years ago in Atlanta. And really what we focus on are three main things: building high-quality mixed-income housing, building a robust cradle through career education pipeline, and providing wraparound services. And it's all place-based. We only work in this neighborhood, and our work is coordinated by what we call the community quarterback. So that's what this Connect is essentially built to do. And I come to the work from a very eclectic background. I spent a lot of time overseas in my youth, both in West Africa and in Central America and Mexico. So I love the idea of working in a multicultural neighborhood. I love that we get to use different languages. We get to meet people from all over the globe who have just incredible backgrounds. And it's just exciting to kind of dive into people's lives and to work with great partners such as KIPP, the YMCA, St. Luke's United Methodist Church, and Legacy Community Health, among others. We also work with a broad array of other partners. But that's what I do in a nutshell.
Well, Anne, welcome. And for the people that don't know about the Gulfton Sharpstown area, it really is, I think, the new Ellis Island of America, because so many people from around the world are coming to the U.S. and coming to Houston and landing in that part of the city. And you said it, Anne, it's multicultural and multi-language, multi-religious, and every multi way you can think of, that's what that area is.
Indeed.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Lauren, tell us about you.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Mush. So my name is Lauren Calderera, and I started my own consulting business about a year and a half ago called Projects Matter, that really focuses on working with startups, nonprofits, and small government entities to be able to think about their workforce and manufacturing pipelines. And I got into this work after being the development director at TXRX Labs and seeing so many nonprofits walk through the doors wanting to think about more earned income revenue streams and include more around maker-based education and manufacturing, and thinking about how do they start to engage more of the artisans and crafters in their communities. And so I have been now working with all of these different organizations that are doing amazing work. And one of the ones that I get to do a lot of great work with is Connect Community, in thinking about the textile ecosystem and thinking about how do we support our newcomers in their craft-based businesses. So I'm really glad to be here today.
Yeah, and Lauren, you and I met when you were still with TXRX, and I just joined the board back then and still am on the board. And so you've been steeped in this world of manufacturing and different kinds of manufacturing for a long time.
I have.
It's
so exciting to see it all transform. But a little bit long now.
Yeah. I think you can still claim, like Anne was talking about in her youth being doing all these other things. So you can still claim that you're doing all this stuff in your youth. So
in my youth.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's jump into to what we're here to talk about, the Sewn Goods Collaborative. Tell me about that story. How did it even begin? Where did the concept come from? Just sort of take us through the journey when and where we are today.
So it has a very crazy beginning. Really at the beginning of the pandemic, almost a year ago today, my husband actually was working to set up an emergency relief fund to raise funds for PPE, getting PPP and PPE mixed up.
Right.
and so that led us to conversations with TXRX, and we just were over there talking to Roland and how do we start prototyping all this equipment that needs to be made like overnight that none of us really have had experience doing. And it quickly became apparent that, you know, TXRX was uniquely set up to do a lot of the prototyping around some of the bigger kind of big engineering pieces, you know, breathing equipment, et cetera. But I knew that our neighborhood had a lot of sewers and tailors from their home countries who could really ramp up quickly to provide the masks. And so I immediately called Lauren and I was like, okay, we have this fantastic opportunity. Do you think we can pull this off? And Lauren, being the eternal optimist that she is, she
said,
sure, this sounds like a great project. So we were kind of off to the races, learning by going and, you know, engaging. I remember the early days of like, okay, we got to go into the community, find out who the sewers are. And we quickly realized that no one really knew how to get onto the internet. Like Zoom was a foreign concept. And so we had a lot of prep work to do around just getting people to connect. Mm-hmm. And our first trainings, we were doing them in Arabic. We were doing them in Spanish. We were doing them in Urdu. And it was a big lift, but it was also super exciting because there were so many people in the neighborhood. Just, this was like, wow, I can get new skills. I can earn some income for my family and I can really help out our city to solve a problem that is really pressing. That's kind of how we got started.
So Lauren, what was that moment when Anne called you? I don't think you ever say no to stuff, but in this case, what made you sort of give it a resounding yes?
So we had been thinking for a while before this about how to really build in maker-based education into Gulfton. And Gulfton already has such an incredible wealth of fabric shops and quinceañera dressmakers and wedding dressmakers. And, you know, it seemed like there was already this interest in textiles and in soft goods that was in the community already. And Anne and I had been kind of contemplating that for a few weeks before the pandemic. And so this really was just this awesome time to think about beta testing this idea. Like, does this community really, yes, it has all these like brick and mortar shops around soft good production, but are the, you know, the sewists there? Are they interested? Is this something that would appeal to them? And so to me, it was like this just great, you know, opportunity to prototype this idea that we sort of had been noodling on for a while. And so, you know, I think things went very fast. We scaled, you know, the business quite quickly, ended up making about 75,000 face masks, and also developing great partnerships with small cut and sew shops throughout Houston that wanted to help out, that wanted to become teachers, that wanted to lend their, you know, their knowledge and experience to the work that we were doing. And so it really, for, you know, the next, you know, 3 months, it really became this little family that was all working together with the sewists and the small batch manufacturers and Anne and I. And, you know, we put in a lot of, I think, long nights of running fabric across Houston to be able to get everybody the, you know, the materials that they needed to produce.
So it's such a fascinating idea of building an ecosystem. And I want to circle back to this concept of getting out and finding people that could help cut and sew, et cetera. Before we get to that, tell me more about the people that you found in the early days that were jumping in and making things. For example, where did they come from, and what kinds of skills did they already have that you guys figured out how to build upon?
So, I mean, I think we were able to leverage some of the relationships that that Connect had already fostered in the community. And so we really went to those kind of community leaders and said, hey, this is our idea. We're looking for people who have XYZ. Can you kind of put your feelers out and pull a group together? And then, so I think that's how we got the crux of the folks. So we had people from Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, all over Central America and Mexico, men and women. We had a Syrian guy who had his own shop in Syria, and I mean, just an incredible tailor. And, you know, all of these people were able to pivot very quickly to making masks. The biggest problem was the pipeline for equipment and materials. Everything was gummed up, and we were having to beg, borrow, and steal, trying to get, well, not steal, but, you know,
heavily
every contact we had, we used.
That's right. So there's such an interesting idea about immigration and skills. And we talk so much about jobs leaving America, and especially these kinds of jobs, because historically we in the US used to do a lot of cut and sew types of work, and perhaps not so much in the Houston area, but other parts of the country like the Eastern Seaboard. It's so wonderful and ironic that as these people have come into the United States, they've brought with them these skills that we don't have a lot of. And that seems like such an amazing sort of dynamic that unfolded in the early days.
Yeah, I would say the other thing that, you know, so we had this group within the Gulch and Sharpstown neighborhood, but we also had put out feelers just to the entire city of Houston. Mm-hmm. And we put together, you know, a group of over 500 sewers. So we had kind of a two-pronged model. We sourced the greater group to provide donated masks, so we could also be, you know, donating to front lines, and then also trying to create kind of a business opportunity for the people in the neighborhood who had been laid off.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it was great because there was some cross-pollination between, you know, some of the larger community sewers were helping train or helping source equipment for us. And it became very much this collective effort around supplying our city with PPE.
What was the driver? Lauren, I'm curious what you think about this. What was the driver? Because as I hear these stories from both of you, within a few weeks or a few months, you created a pretty big employee base. You were able to supply them with some materials and equipment. So you solved some supply chain issues. You found customers. You began selling stuff. I mean, that's one hell of a startup story. I mean, there's a lot of startups that would wish to have that kind of a story. So Lauren, in your view, what was the driver behind that? Why is it that this happened so quickly and so well?
Well, I mean, I think it was the kind of the intersection of both needing PPE in the city, and that, you know, we had all these frontline workers who did not have access to it, or there wasn't enough. And then at the same time, we had these, you know, Gulfton residents who had recently been laid off and needed supplementary income to be able to keep them, you know, their bills paid and their rent paid. And so those things came together. And then I think there was a larger piece that came with this, which was that our, you know, the different maker spaces collaborated around this, and then the different cut and sew shops came in as collaborators and other nonprofits as well. And so I think we were able to do this not only because of, you know, Gulfton residents and, you know, but also because of these collaborations. Like Houston Community College was doing a lot of our cutting of fabric for us, which made it, you know, sped up our production ability because they were using the laser cutters to cut the fabric, and then we could hand off the cut fabric to the sewist to sew it. And then we had, when we got large orders in, we had these small batch manufacturers who, you know, by law, they couldn't do their manufacturing, their regular manufacturing at that time, but because it was PPE, they could still be working. And so that allowed them to stay open and to be able to pay the wages of their workers as well, because we could then be able to give them some of these larger orders to help with our production. So really, to me, it was sort of like all of these things coming together at a critical time, and all of these partnerships that really just kind of leaned in to be able to do the work.
It's such an amazing story, I think, about Houston and how I've seen time and time again our community rally around an idea of some kind, and often it is around some kind of an emergency event like a hurricane, flood, or in this case the pandemic. But it seems like there's something within our DNA in Houston that allows us to collaborate in this way and on this basis. And do you notice things like that also in our community, whether it's around the sewn goods collaborative or in other efforts? Do you see that sort of spirit of collaboration overall in Houston?
Absolutely. You know, we're a city that seems to have a rolling, crises. So I think our muscle is becoming well-developed.
Right.
But I also would say, just in Gulfton, I mean, we have worked really hard to build that robust partnership that we really, through good times and bad, when we have crises, we band together. And we've seen that in Harvey, we've seen that in the Snowmageddon recently, and we've seen that in when, you know, we have tragedies happen. Everyone plays a role and shows that support for the neighborhood, and the neighborhood knows that, and they are deeply appreciative. And I think that's one reason we've had really successful engagement as well.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So I think you mentioned earlier, and that this group sold 75,000 masks. Is that right?
Correct.
So who on earth did you sell them to, and how did you sell them?
So we sold to Metro, Methodist Hospital, we had a huge order to Etsy, to Build a Nest, which was this kind of Etsy collaborative that sent to hospitals around the Northeast. Where else, Lauren?
The Baylor Teen Clinic, to some, most of the federally qualified health clinics in Houston, some of the different police departments.
Mm-hmm.
To write.
How did they find out about you? How did you get word to them?
So early on, we were able to do a fair bit of press interviews. Like, we did an interview at Houston Furniture Bank because we were working with them. There was things that showed up in the Chronicle and other, and people just, I mean, I think, you know, in those early days, there just wasn't a lot of availability. So they found us through the internet or through the press.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, okay, so now you're sort of fresh off the heels of launching a business within a few months, making at least 75,000 customers happy, figuring out supply chains and human capital, all this other stuff. So where, tell me about from that point to today, what has happened recently over the last few months with this whole idea?
Well, once the demand for masks started to abate, or there was more in the market to purchase, we, you know, really from the impetus of the neighborhood, they were like, what's next? You know, what skills can we learn to kind of do the next thing? And so Lauren and I were really like, okay, well, now we need to think about upskilling so that they can really pivot to a wide variety of projects when we start having, serious conversations with private producers. I think one of the things that the pandemic brought forth was really this idea of, you know, supply chain management and people wanting to at least look at doing a portion of their production back in the U.S. so they don't get caught flat-footed, you know, in the next crises. And so we've had some just fantastic conversations and actually moving forward with a number of initiatives and just, you know, true to kind of Houston, you know, we're making things like welding caps and, you know, kind of industrial sewn goods, but mm-hmm. as well as we're actually working on a pickleball skirt, which apparently is taking the nation by storm. I have yet to learn, but.
Yeah, tell us more about pickleball. I didn't know what pickleball was until you told me, and I honestly had to Google it to figure it out. And you're right, it's big, but tell me about the pickleball skirts and what on earth is pickleball? What is a pickleball skirt? And how did you discover this opportunity? What are you doing about it?
So it was really brought to us by one of my board members who plays with her children and grandchildren. And she said, you know, I've scoured the internet. There's no product out there that is specific to pickleball because you have a bigger ball and tennis skirts don't work for that. So she's like, I will help you. Like, I'll help fund, you know, prototyping for this skirt. And I will help you, you know, promote it. So we're like, and it was really kind of the next level up on sewing. So we thought, well, this might be a good opportunity to, you know, build in new skills and, you know, see what happens. So we're learning, you know, there's a whole new set of kind of challenges around that in terms of getting all the materials, but what it's also led to is now, like, we just hired one of our sewists to be kind of our quality control person and do training videos and really take over responsibility for that piece of it. So I love, both Lauren and I are just so excited to see the sewists starting to really build self-confidence around their skills and around, you know, what they can offer this collaborative.
That's truly fascinating, the notion that you now got people who started out now assuming more of either a leadership role or a different kind of a role to help improve the business. And at the same time, you've got this sort of new type of customer coming in. Now that they've discovered that there's a group of people who can do cut and sew related work right here in Houston. Lauren, what about you from your perspective these last couple of months? What have you seen? What have you learned about what's happening with the Sewn Goods Collaborative?
Well, to me, I mean, I think Anne said a lot, like this energy around continuing production and thinking about new kind of products that can be made within Gulfton, you know, is been sort of the driving force for us to think more broadly about where we want the collaborative to go. And so we have this opportunity now, and with Connect is building a new multi-family housing development, and the ground floor of it is 7,500 square feet. And so we're visioning for that space to be what we're calling a textile lab and entrepreneurship center, really to continue to work with the sewists in Gulfton so that they can have access to equipment. They can get upskilling on different kinds of equipment. So thinking more broadly around like laser cutters, industrial embroidery machines, direct to garment printers, and then offer classes for the community to come and learn and be able to take classes in things like CAD and pattern making, as well as sewing, and really open up the space to be a new a production space for Houston where companies can come and have their soft goods prototyped locally. They can have their production locally. And then at the same time, we're upskilling residents so that they can go and get maybe jobs in sewing, but also jobs within other manufacturing industries that they'll now have sort of the foundational skills to really give them a strong launching pad to another career almost. So that's really, I mean, to me, that's kind of where we're going. And it's really exciting to see the community, the support from the Gulfton community in doing this work.
So obviously you've got to fund this, right? You're going from the scrappy startup to version two of this business concept, and including what you're doing at the textile lab. Tell us more about what it's going to take to really put this together and to realize the vision that both of you have.
It's going to take a lot of effort. So we're estimating that it'll be about $1.5 to $2 million to really build out this space in the way that we think is necessary for it to be successful. And by that, I mean, really having, you know, it's important for us to have these three different spaces all in close proximity to each other so that the people who are learning in the classroom about CAD can also see the, you know, the production happening for the producers and then, you know, learning in the maker space so that people are kind of having this collision of ideas and, you know, having access to the actual small business owners. We've already seen that play out in productive ways. And we just think that that's what we need more of. And what I particularly like about what we're doing is that, you know, sewing is the vessel by which we're, you know, it's the way that we're, you know, building skills so that people can then go on to do whatever they want. Sure. But it starts from the premise that we work with people where they're at, not where we want them to be. And so while there may be some, you know, I think we may think, oh, well, sewing, that's like so last century, but it's actually not. I mean, it's part of everything we do and right. wear every single day. And it can lead to a multitude of industries and jobs. You know, you could be the quality control person for, you know, any number of things. So I've seen, you know, we always talk about high tech, but there's so many neighborhoods like this neighborhood that we can't get to high tech until we create more robust on-ramps to those jobs.
So I also think that things like sewing clothes or garments or other items that people use, that's something that we all need every day. And I think we're all experiencing massive supply chain disruptions from around the world. You mentioned a couple of them, obviously the ICE event, the COVID before then. And then, you know, we've all watched on the news, a big canal getting trapped. That's limiting the flow of goods around the world. And with tens of billions of dollars worth of impact, wouldn't it be amazing? And wouldn't it be better if we could buy stuff that was made locally? And so whether it's, pumps and compressors or garments or whatever the case might be, it just seems like we should have that as a part of our portfolio of how we buy things.
Lauren, you want to talk about, we took a field trip last week to the textile recycling center.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
Lauren, tell us about that.
So we went to one of the largest textile recycling centers in Houston. They ship out about 100,000 pounds of used clothing every day. Wow. And I mean, it was incredible. There was clothing from the ground to the ceiling, and some of it gets picked for other countries, and some of it gets turned into rags, and some of it gets upcycled in different ways. Mm-hmm. But just to think about, they had an entire warehouse filled with bundled clothing ready to ship abroad. But because of, you know, the canal being blocked, they weren't able to ship it out. So it was just kind of building up in their, mm-hmm. in their storage room. And to me, this is just another kind of like, I think, data point of what we've learned around the need for more onshoring and nearshoring of production into our communities, and thinking about how do we start to take even those garments that are sitting there and start to give them a second life here in Houston and give them an opportunity to be reused locally. It also reminds me of this interesting story. Ann and I talked to a cotton farmer in North Texas who has been a long, you know, legacy, you know, cotton farmer. We no longer have a mill in the state. So we cannot process our cotton locally, even though we, you know, for generations had been a big exporter of cotton. So he ships his cotton to the Carolinas to be milled and made into thread. Then he ships it to somewhere north of here, I forget if it was like Oklahoma, to be dyed. And then it comes back to him and he sells it as jersey rolls. So to me, it's like, you know, he was so excited about what we're doing, because again, if he can cut down on the shipping costs by having more of, you know, his supply chain closer to him, it, you know, helps him as a farmer in thinking about what to do with his product. So there's just hundreds of stories like that. And I think we're starting to wake up around how do we start to build the infrastructure to bring back that small, at least a small batch manufacturing back into our cities and start to reteach people these lost skills that, you know, that are still so necessary in our life.
Well, you both have created tremendous momentum in this area. And I would think that if any large business owner or corporate leader wanted to really think about their supply chains and making them more resilient, reducing emissions from that come from shipping things from all around the world and make them here locally, that they should reach out to both of you about how the Sewn Goods Collaborative can make products for them. So tell us more about how best people can reach you and get more information about what you're doing, and also help to provide support to encourage the next stage of this entire wonderful initiative.
Well, I think, I mean, the best, we're, you know, we're on all social media. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, look for My Connect Community or send me an email at Anne, at myconnectcommunity.org. And I think, you know, we need help on, you know, obviously the financial side, trying to, you know, fund this big effort takes a lot. But I also think we just, you know, we're always looking for people to, you know, learn from, to bounce ideas off of, to help us really put the puzzle together, because it's a huge ecosystem. And and I just judging from our conversations to date, there's a lot of energy around this, particularly from, you know, small producers. And how do we begin to kind of make this work, you know, in a kind of not only for Houston, but for the state of Texas and the region.
I agree. And by the way, I'll include your contact information in the notes around the show so people can refer to that and around the show link so they can get in touch with you. Well, Lauren and Anne, thank you so much for your time today. Before we wrap up, is there a parting message or a final word that you want to leave for our listeners that you think is important?
Lauren, you want to go first?
I mean, I guess my parting word is, like, I think if we can start to think about how do we start nearshoring at community levels and start really engaging residents and learning skill, you know, manufacturing skills and making skills, and start to think about how can neighborhoods and communities start to create revenue within themselves. And then, you know, the idea is that that can just kind of scale from one neighborhood to another neighborhood. And pretty soon we have a city that is thinking more around nearshoring with, you know, different neighborhoods who have different niches that can all work collaboratively. And so, you know, to me, I feel like we're doing this. This is the first round of it. And if we can get it to work in Gulfton around sewing, then we know that it can work in other neighborhoods, both in Houston.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And it is working. That's right. And how about you? Final words from you.
I think for me, it's really about building the pipeline. And, you know, we work with a lot of schools, and what we see is that they're so, you know, focused on academics and getting into college that sometimes I feel like we've lost, you know, teaching of how to work with our hands and figuring out by doing. Mm-hmm. And I just feel that this makerspace is a perfect laboratory for kids to learn in a completely different way and learn from each other. And so if we can start reigniting the passion around creating and building and making, I think we've got a winning model, I believe. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think you're right too. Well, thanks again, guys, for joining us today on the Manufacture Houston podcast. I loved hearing about what you're doing and can't wait to hear more about what this group of people is going to do for our city and beyond. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
This has been the Manufacture Houston podcast, brought to you by Alchemy Industrial. For more information, check out alchemyindustrial.com. If you'd like to be on the show or want to recommend someone to get on the show, just reach out to me on LinkedIn. M-U-S-H-K-H-A-N, Mush Khan. I look forward to hearing from you.